we are gone and forgotten, our buildings will keep on proclaiming that here have lived people who had a heart for the needs of children. Reverend Klein, 1929.
Even though the buildings are gone, my son Andy and I have uncovered the long-forgotten stories of the people who lived there, worked there, and died there. They were at the same time ordinary and extraordinary, and we hope you will be inspired by the sacrifices they made. By sharing their stories, we ensure that the people who had a heart for the needs of children will be remembered. Welcome to The Homes. My name is Karen Thallaker.
And I'm Andrew Newell. We're your hosts as we explore the challenges and joys of life at an institution housing orphans and old folks in rural Iowa during the year 1929. Welcome to June of 1929. For a brief time, the nation took a break from bootlegging and financial troubles and was instead gripped with one question. Where did Charles Lindbergh and his bride go on their honeymoon? The nuptials of perhaps the world's most famous person caught everyone by surprise. The headline of one paper read, "Lindbergh and Miss Anne Morrow wed. Brief ceremony united famous flyer and daughter of ambassador to Mexico. Sudden decision is made by bride. Couple departs in automobile on secret honeymoon. Colonel orders plane made ready." The Lindberghs had been married in the state of Maine in a brief private ceremony at the end of May without any previous announcement. A witness to the ceremony recounted, "Miss Morrow was quite composed during the entire ceremony. Colonel Lindbergh was entirely at ease. He hasn't any nerves." It turns out that after the ceremony, the Lindbergh set sail on a yacht Lindbergh had purchased a week earlier. But instead of a quiet honeymoon, the yacht would become a focus of international interest. Anne wrote in her diary, "They found us again this morning. That terrifying drone of a plane hunting you, and boats." There were daily reports on their location, and crowds would gather wherever they sailed. Learning more about the intense interest in the Lindberghs back in June of 1929 gives some additional perspective to the media frenzy that occurred when their firstborn child was kidnapped and murdered in 1932.
June was one of the busiest months at the Holmes. The reason was Weissenfest. Weisse, in German, is orphan. This celebration was also known as Orphans Festival and Open House Day. This was the largest gathering of the year at the Holmes. People came from far and wide for church services in both English and German. They also came for the food and the music and to see the operation of the Holmes. My mom grew up on a farm in northeast Iowa, about 30 minutes from a different Lutheran orphanage. She recalls that in the 1940s, she and her family would attend Orphans Day at that orphanage. Mom remembers that her whole family would get all dressed up and spend a Sunday afternoon on the orphanage grounds. She always looked forward to eating ice cream and drinking root beer. She said the part that is still most vivid to her is looking through the nursery glass at the babies. Every year, the Orphans Festival at the Holmes in Muscatine was important because of the donations and goodwill it generated. But this year, it was even more important because of the debt on the building. Bigger crowds would mean larger offerings. So what did they need to make a large crowd a reality? Two things: good weather and good publicity.
There are two aspects of the weather worth mentioning: the weather on the day of Orphan Festival, and also the weather in the days preceding it. For the day of, rain meant there could be some difficulty in getting people up and down the steep hills of the home's grounds. It also might be difficult to accommodate people in various buildings in case of heavy rain and larger crowds. Extreme heat could also keep people away. The weather in the days leading up to the festival were maybe even more important and involve a fact of life in rural Iowa in 1929 that most of us simply don't have to concern ourselves with today. The fact was, even major roadways could be impassable for automobiles due to rain and flooding. Iowa roads in 1929 were mostly gravel. Even though the automobile became more common in Iowa around 1910, Iowa didn't have an official road map until 1919. In that year, a law was passed in Iowa that funded the improvement and hard surfacing of Iowa primary roads. Primary roads were considered those roads and highways that connected towns of at least 1,000 people. In the 1924 edition of the Official Road Guide to the Lincoln Highway, drivers were warned that, quote, "It is a folly to try to drive on Iowa dirt roads during or immediately after a heavy rain. Time will not be saved by attempting it," end quote. The Muscatine Journal headline on June 1st read, "Promise good roads during week unless heavy rains fall." The article read, "Iowa motorists need not fear dirt and gravel highways early this month unless heavy rains set in. 23 paving outfits last week surfaced about 18.1 miles of primary roads." But another weather problem reared its ugly head. It wasn't extreme heat, but extreme cold. The headlines read on June 2nd, 1929, that Iowa had the coldest June 2nd since 1899. Some areas were only 39 degrees Fahrenheit. But Orphan's Day wasn't until June 16th. Would the rain hold off and the cold give way to warmer temperatures so that Orphan's Day would be a success?
The other important factor was publicity. There were three main avenues to get the information out. The first was church bulletins and announcements. An individual congregation would print the information in its weekly bulletin and also announce it during Sunday services. Often, a congregation would make arrangements to carpool or caravan for the big day. The second avenue for publicity was the newspaper. The Muscatine paper carried news stories in both May and June. The dedication of the new building was front and center. Here's what they wrote. June 16, date of dedication, Lutheran home ceremonies to be held with Orphans Festival. Dedication of Bethany Home, the new $50,000 brick building at the Lutheran Orphans and Old People's Home on the Burlington Road, will take place Sunday, June 16th. The ceremonies will be doubly important due to the celebration of the annual Orphans Festival on the same day. Lutheran churches from a wide radius are planning to dismiss services and join in the observance. Prominent Lutheran ministers and leaders from this area will also have a part in the ceremonies. Construction of the three-story building was delayed by weather conditions during the fall and winter. The dedicatory exercises were first planned during the holiday season, but because of delays, they were deferred until summer. The laying of the cornerstone was marked by special services September 24th. The building is almost finished. The building, known as Bethany Home, will be used as a girls' dormitory and baby cottage. It is being erected as a memorial to the late Reverend Henry Reinemund, who for years served as superintendent. The cornerstone bears the name of the home and the inscription, "In memory of the Reverend H. Reinemund." A news article on June 15th, the day before the festival, was placed on a page that had sponsored ads from the local contractors who had assisted with the building. For example, the electrical contractor's ad read, "Congratulations and best wishes to the Lutheran Orphans Home on the opening of their splendid girls' dormitory. When you visit this new building, you will note with pleasure the beautiful lighting fixtures. This was our job, and we used the genuine K-Line Radiant fixtures. In an institution of this kind, service and convenience are demanded. As a necessity and as an investment, the home uses Skell gas, a purified and compressed gas in steel cylinders, which is 5 times hotter than manufactured gas. Odorless, dependable, and very moderate in cost, it is ideal for country homes or where city gas is not attainable."
The article had a large photo of Reverend Klein under a title that read, "Head of Home." Here's what they anticipated for the Orphans Festival. Hundreds of visitors from Lutheran parishes in this section of Iowa and from a wide radius in Illinois will come to Muscatine Sunday to attend the formal dedication of Bethany Home, the new 3-story brick structure erected at the Lutheran Orphans and Old People's Home. Dispatches from Chicago announce a party of 20 will motor to Muscatine. Others will come from Forest Park, Peru, Lemoy, Mendota, Princeton, and Kewaunee, Illinois, from Clinton, Davenport, Muscatine County towns, and other churches in this area. Ministers, singers, and other representatives of these congregations will have a part in the dedicatory programs. The exercises will be both in German and English, with a major part of the programs in the English tongue. The Children's Festival will be combined with the dedication exercises. This festival, held each spring, has been an annual celebration for more than 20 years. Because of the other events, the children will not have as prominent a part as usual. However, they will be on hand to usher the guests through the building and about the grounds. The Orphans Band of 20 pieces, organized more than 2 years ago, will play during the noon hour and before the afternoon program. This organization, financed and sponsored by the Muscatine Kiwanis Club, is under the leadership of Elmer M. Ziegler. The programs are announced for 10 o'clock in the morning and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If weather conditions permit, the exercises will be held on the hillside back of the home. The article also included information regarding the founding of the homes entitled Children Left Homeless Provided Inspiration to Establish Lutheran Home. 5 children, whose parents had been active members of Zion Lutheran Church, who were left alone without any means of support, provided the inspiration for the late Reverend Henry Reinemund, which resulted in the establishment of the Lutheran Orphans Home on the Burlington Road. When the parents of these 5 children died, the Reverend Mr. Reinemund, then pastor at Zion Lutheran Church, took them into his home and cared for them. Founding of a home for other unfortunate children was considered, and friends were solicited. The gift of a 5-acre tract of land, which included a 2-story brick structure, still a part of the home, made it possible for the Reverend Mr. Reinemund to realize his dream. The building and land were donated by Mrs. Ben Hershey and daughter for the purpose of establishing an institution for charity. The founding took place in 1895. Both the old people and the orphans were housed in the building until 1904, when a separate building was erected for the old people.
In addition to individual congregations and the newspaper, the Messenger newsletter was the third essential method of pre-event publicity, and it encouraged readers to remember the date. Reverend Klein knew that he needed to coax people a bit to get in their cars and travel a distance. In 1929, Muscatine was in the top 15 cities for population in the state of Iowa, and so coming to Muscatine would have been a trip to the big city for many. Here's how the newsletter described it. Are you making plans to come down to Muscatine on dedication day? It will soon be here. We want to make this the largest day we have ever had in the history of our work. We want thousands of you good folks to come down and see our institutions. One day at our place will tell you more than I can do in years of writing. The roads to Muscatine are good. From the Illinois side, they are paved. On the Iowa side, a paved road runs up to Muscatine County. After that, 12 miles of very fine gravel. You will enjoy a visit to Muscatine. You will see a very fine institution which was founded by the Reverend H. Reinemund on nothing, but today can take its place in the ranks of fine institutions of our church. Visit our 3 different homes and see the children and old folks. Walk down through our fields and barns. Climb the hill and see our school and orchard. You will see that every cent you have paid toward our institutions has been well spent. Muscatine itself is a very beautiful city. Go out on the high bridge that spans the Mississippi. Look far into the distance to the green islands that nestle in the river. Muscatine has the largest pearl button factories in the world. Weed Park is a beautiful place. The children will enjoy the antelopes that shyly scamper among the trees.
We had to verify whether Muscatine had antelopes in 1929, and sure enough, they did. Mr. and Mrs. James Weed donated land for the park in 1907, and in 1921, the Weed Park Zoo opened and stayed open in some form until 1980. At points in its history, it had Bengal tigers, peacocks, monkeys, deer, a lioness, and even an elephant. And yes, it had African antelopes. Reverend Klein continued, "Climb the hill and visit radio station KTNT. You have always wanted to visit a radio station and see how they do it. This is your opportunity, for Mr. Baker will be glad to show you around. It is a beautiful station, high on the hill above Muscatine, where a hearty welcome is always assured you. Visit Zion Lutheran Church and its fine school. We ask pastors to announce this big day from their pulpits. Drop services for the day and come down with your flock. It can easily be done. In other years, caravans of cars have come from as far as Peru, Illinois, and have made the trip in safety and were able to be home in ample time. We know that you will enjoy the trip. You have often wanted to see our institution. You have spoken of it many times. You have often wanted to go for an outing. This is the opportunity. Be sure to make your plans and come.
As a side note, Peru, Illinois is 110 miles from Muscatine, so that was quite a trip for people to make when you consider the road conditions and that they might be traveling at 40 miles per hour. We were curious as to why Reverend Klein would highlight the radio station. Would it be that special? Would people really want to take a tour? The answer to that is yes. Iowa's first commercial radio station didn't appear until 1920. Norman Baker, who is specifically mentioned in the newsletter as the person who would give the tour, acquired the station in 1923 and started broadcasting in 1925. The call letters, KTNT, stand for Know the Naked Truth. Mr. Baker, as it turns out, was part performer and part huckster, and in the end, part criminal. He was born in Muscatine and was a vaudeville performer. He patented a portable calliope that was used by carnivals. According to the Visit Muscatine website, Baker's station became very popular with its lineup of live music, agricultural reports, and his own broadcasts. He became even more important when he started broadcasting on behalf of Herbert Hoover. In 1929, he claimed he had a treatment for cancer and opened up his own cancer hospital in Muscatine. The problem was, of course, that it was all a scam. Even so, he collected hundreds of thousands of dollars from people seeking treatment. He later lived in Mexico and built a radio station there. He came back to the U.S., but left Muscatine for Arkansas and later spent time in prison for mail fraud. At the time that he was mentioned in the Holmes newsletter, he was a local celebrity, and people would even go to the radio station on Sunday afternoons and sit outside listening to the broadcasts.
The programs for the Orphans Festival and dedication of the new building were specially printed. A photo of Reverend Reinemund was on the cover. The program we saw was printed in German, but there may have been an English language one as well. The program noted special music selections and preaching from a number of Lutheran pastors. And, of course, there would be a collecta, or an offering. For the dedication of the building, the Orphans Band would give a concert under the direction of Professor Elmer Ziegler. Professor Ziegler was known as Muscatine's music man, and he would come out to the homes once a week for band lessons. Professor Ziegler's daughter, Dorothy, went on to become a well-known trombonist. When Dorothy was hired in 1944 to play first trombone for the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, she was one of only a few female trombonists performing with a major American orchestra. By all accounts, Professor Ziegler acted with great kindness toward the children. In addition to teaching them music and conducting their band, he would take them to concerts and plays. Reverend Klein wrote, "Needless to say that our children enjoy these treats, which break up the monotony of everyday life."
In order to prepare for all the Orphan Festival visitors, a major house cleaning happened. As Reverend Klein said, "Miss Stair, as everyone knows, cannot rest nor sleep until everything is spick and span." The workers were like a big family, and most lived right on the property. One worker that is mentioned frequently is Martha. She was also known as Little Martha, and she worked in the old folks' home. We found a photograph from 1932 of all of the workers, and we couldn't help but notice that one worker was much shorter in stature than the rest. She may have only been 4.5 feet tall. When I showed the photograph to my dad, he pointed her out and said, "That's Martha Witzke." She was affectionately called Little Martha. She was born in Germany in 1884, and the story goes that she was a friend of Mrs. Klein's from childhood. We suspect Martha had some sort of spine condition that caused a rounding or hump to form on her upper back. It would have made work difficult for her, and at the turn of the century, she may have even been considered an outcast because of her physical appearance. But she found a home with the Kleins. After they returned from North Dakota and started their work in Muscatine, the Kleins invited Martha to live and work with them. Reverend Klein promised Martha that if she worked there until retirement, she would always have a home there, even after they left. and that she could be buried in the home cemetery. My dad said that he remembers Martha spending vacations with them. He recalls putting her on the handlebars of his bicycle and transporting her here and there. When she could no longer work in the old folks' home, she became one of the old folks herself and lived at the homes until her death in 1974. We believe that she was the last person to be buried in the little cemetery on the hill. Martha would have been one of the many workers preparing the homes for the Orphans Day visitors.
Now for the moment of truth. Was Orphans Day a success? Did the weather cooperate so that visitors were able to travel to Muscatine from far and near? Did the visitors come to the homes and bring their offering money and donations with them? The answer to all of those questions was a resounding yes. According to an article entitled Dreams Do Come True, here is how the day was described. It was a joyful crowd of 1,000 that came together at the homes at Muscatine on Sunday morning, June 16th, to dedicate the new Henry Reinemund Memorial Home for Girls. Never have we seen so many people on the grounds. They came from everywhere to be glad with us and to praise the mercy of God. Through the ground and up the hill, they wandered admiring the splendid buildings that nestle on the side of the hill. And over it all shone in glorious splendor the June sunshine. They had come from near and far to help us dedicate this beautiful building to the glory of God and the service of the church. For years, we have dreamed of such a home. We, who years ago had been enthused by that wonderful man, Pastor Henry Reinemund. Years ago, we stood down there on the road when he pointed to the hill, east of the home, for the aged, and proclaimed that someday a home for girls would stand there. He did not see his dream come true, for long ago he has been called to his eternal rest. But his spirit goes marching on. Today there stands on that hill, trees now cut down, the building he dreamed of. And because he dreamed of this building and prayed for it and helped us to see the building, we have named it for him, the Pastor Reinemund Memorial Home for Girls. It is a strong and sturdy building, honestly built like was the man for whom we named it. We shall be proud of this building for many years to come because we built as honestly as we knew how. Yet it is a building of beauty because it is built to offer shelter for the girls and little children. A house for children, in all its simplicity, is always beautiful. Pastor Reinemund gave his life for the cause, and his last prayer was that the work would go on. It is going on and on. And we know that over yonder, where there are no orphans, last Sunday was a day of joy and happiness. For up to him came the songs of happiness of the crowd that dedicated this wonderful house to his memory, Pastor Henry Reinemund.
The services transpired this way. Promptly at 10, the big audience gathered around the pulpit under the oaks up on the hill. The band opened the services with a prelude, as also they accompanied the singing of all the hymns of the services throughout the day. The pastors C. Becker of Fort Collins, Colorado, and H. Niederwimmer of Coleridge, Nebraska, were the speakers for the morning. Music was furnished by the choir of the Zion Church, Davenport, and the male choir of the West Burlington Church. During the noon hour, the good ladies of the Aid Society of Zion Church, Muscatine, furnished lunch, while the men's club were in charge of several refreshment stands. These good friends worked hard to be of service to our many guests. At 2 o'clock, the dedication of the new building took place. This service was in charge of the president of our society, the Reverend H. Felch, and took place at the entrance of the new home. The congregation then again went up the hill to hear the speakers of the afternoon, Professor J. Fritchell of Clinton and Pastor Felch. The music again was furnished by the two splendid organizations who were heard in the morning. After Pastor A. Weniger, superintendent of the Waverly Home, was heard in words of greeting from this sister institution, the services were brought to a close by Pastor Klein. The enthusiastic audience spent the noon hour and also some time after the afternoon service in inspecting our plant here at Muscatine. Full of praise, they returned to their homes after a day well spent in Muscatine. Their faces wreathed in smiles of satisfaction, proud in the knowledge that again their church has taken a decided step forward. Reverend Klein told readers, "When we are gone and forgotten, these buildings will keep on proclaiming that here have lived people who had a heart for the needs of children. The total receipts of the day will amount to over $1,000, a far better showing than we have ever made before. But we shall need this money and much more to pay for this building. We are left with a debt of $50,000. This may look staggering to many, but we have said it so often, so we will not go into it today, that we needed this building. We simply will be using the home while we pay for it." Check out our Instagram at Life at the Homes, and you can see a photo of the new building, as well as a photo of Reverend Felch, Professor Fritchell, and Reverend Klein at the dedication. You can also see our friend Martha Witzke and a photograph of the Orphans Band.
As a successful June comes to a close, there is no rest for the weary. Although July will bring 4th of July celebrations and summer fun for many, daily life at the home and the constant search for food and funding will continue. We hope you've enjoyed hearing about life at the homes in June. Join us for episode 8 as we learn about life in July of 1929. This podcast was researched and hosted by Andrew Newell and Karen Thaliker, and sound was edited by Robert Newell. Special thanks to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa, for the use of their podcast studio.
If you have additional stories and information about the Lutheran Homes of Muscatine from 1921 through 1941, please send us a direct message on our Instagram at Life at the Homes.